Hey guys, welcome back to the Science and Religion Podcast. I'm Seth Brown. With me is
Colin Turpin. Welcome back, guys.
Yep. We are really excited about this episode. Let me tell you, it's going to get hot and heavy real quick.
This is one of the big ones.
One of the big ones. We're going to be talking about evolution. That's right. All the things that you ever wanted to know about evolution. Just kidding. You'll probably want to do more research after we're done.
But
that's the hope. That's the hope.
Yes. Right? We hope that you will.
That you are challenged, that you are intrigued, and that you walk away thinking more about this idea of evolution. So, that being said, Colin, I think there's some housekeeping we have to do.
Okay, let's do that.
With evolution.
Yeah.
So, one of our earlier episodes, we talked definitions.
Okay, yeah.
But one of the things we just now decided that we need to do for this episode is talk more definitions.
More definitions?
More definitions.
Wow.
So, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and do that.
Okay, So, evolution, I think, is one of the, maybe one of the biggest areas where people aren't understanding what they're saying when they say it.
Okay.
I think people have a lot of misconceptions about evolution. So yeah, we're just going to take some time to say what it is. And another caveat before we start is this is not a biology lesson.
Nope.
We're not here to give you a lecture about how genes and things work. If you want to do that, there are tons of resources.
Absolutely.
Literally everywhere.
We're not one of them.
Please, yes. We have lots of things to look that up. So, with that said, let's jump into it. So, earlier this week, I Googled evolution to figure out what the heck it is.
A sensible thing to do.
And what I got is it is a change in heritable characteristics of biological populations over successive generations. So, that's really wordy and long, so we're not going to use that. But what it's basically saying is that as all biological creatures, over time, our successive generations, our children, grandchildren, their children, we are having changes that are being made to us on the genetic level. That's very important. There's specific genetic change, and over a very, 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 very long time, those genetic changes start manifesting in different ways, which leads to different populations and new species and things like that. So essentially, our shortened definition, the one that you're going to hear me use a lot today, is that evolution is gene change via natural selection. So a change of genes through natural selection, through survival of the fittest, of nature downplaying certain characteristics, and then they eventually will stop showing up in the genes after a while. So if that is our definition of evolution, one of the other big things that I hear a lot about is this idea that its title is the theory of evolution. That's how it's shown in textbooks. That's how we're taught in class. Mm-hmm. It's the theory of evolution. That's what it is. And this, I think, is one of the weak points of the naming convention of science that has been established, I don't know, maybe forever, that this idea of this word theory. And so what does this word theory mean? I hear all the time that, oh, it's just a theory. It's just a theory. It is a proposed solution. And so when I hear that, what I'm hearing you say is, I have no idea what the scientific word theory means. Because theory is currently what we're using to describe gravity. The theory of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So is it just an idea that there's gravity around us? Is there other options? I wasn't aware of these. So essentially, let me explain. Theory, it scientifically is a set of scientific laws. So it's to a point where we've gathered a lot of these similarities, a lot of these occurrences, tied them together in laws, and then tied all of those together into an overarching theory. When something is a theory, it allows us to make predictions. So like the theory of gravity, if I drop this pin out of my hand, I can predict it will fall to the ground, and we can see that's true. So through all of this, the reason why we're talking about this is I think especially in the middle of Oklahoma growing up here, there's a lot of anti-intellectualism, a lot of kind of shove it out of the way, ignoring, oh, you know, it's just a theory, you don't have to worry about it. But in reality, evolution is something that you should, I'm not saying that you need to agree with, but I'm saying that it is something you need to take seriously, and perhaps that need to take more seriously. So our hope for you today is not necessarily that you would just accept it or reject it, but
consider it.
Consider it and wrestle seriously, with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And once again, on this podcast, how many times we brought this up, we're not here to tell you what is true and what to believe. We're here to tell you what the conversation is so that you can jump in and be a part of it.
Right. And so I'm glad you brought that up. We're going to do our best to walk that line of being impartial. But I think you've probably already been able to tell both Colin and I are get really excited about this.
Right.
And I think you'll see a slant a certain direction. And again, we're going to try our best to walk this line, but you might pick up on that, and we apologize up front. But we are going to consider both sides to this, and we'll have a little surprise at the end of our pod that I'll mention. So before we begin, I kind of want to talk a little bit about these ideas of paradigms.
Okay, yeah.
You think this is a good time?
Please. We'll just go for it. Yeah, please do it.
So Colin was talking about this idea of the theory of evolution, in that this theory, as we see it and as the scientific community sees it, does the best job of explaining the facts we see in nature. The reason I bring this up is that there's a particular way that science happens. And I think a lot of people think that science happens, or the way that science works, is this slow accumulation of fact. Fact, we figured out that if you drop a pin, it drops this fast. Write that fact down. We figured out that this, you know, the sun rises every morning at this time based off of the, that's a fact. Write that down and put it in the big fact pool. I don't think that's quite how science works. I think something a little more subtle is happening. So rather than just a slow accumulation of facts, the way that science works is that science, in any field you look at, whether it's the physical sciences, biological sciences, what else? What other sciences? I guess physical contains them all.
The social sciences.
Social sciences. There you go. Yes. Psychology. Sorry, Colin. So whatever field you look at, science undergoes these things called paradigm shifts. So the way that we understand the world within this particular field is revolutionized. Take, for example, Newton's laws of gravity. Okay, in the 1920s, when Einstein discovered the theory of relativity, that was a result of a long process of Newton's laws being unable to explain certain anomalies. So the problem was, these scientists were seeing these massive problems with the theory of gravity, the theory of Newton's gravity, I should say.
Yeah.
They were seeing these problems, but they didn't reject Newton's theories at once. They didn't run into a problem and go, well, crap, Newton's laws can't explain this, so we need to get rid of Newton's laws and find something else. No, what they did is they worked extremely diligently to find out how Newton's laws does apply to this problem. And Einstein grew up in that environment. He was aware with the problems. He was aware of the issues of his day. And as a result, that set him up to discover the theory of general relativity.
And the way that you explained to me this earlier, talking about paradigms, is fitting shapes into boxes, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to use that analogy?
Gosh, I don't know if I remember it as well as you're remembering it.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I assumed you had that.
Maybe next time.
Okay.
I'll probably talk about. So the guy who came up with this idea of how science works, his name is Thomas Kuhn. He wrote a really good book. I'll probably bring him up again, so be looking forward in the future for the box and shape analogy.
Oh, can't wait.
All that to say, when Einstein was able to propose the theory of general relativity, it answered those anomalies that Newton's laws could not explain. But it still left just enough questions that science could continue. If there were no questions left, science would not continue within a particular field. Because what else is there to find? There's nothing to answer. So science. So I'm saying that all to say, I want to preface this argument about this discussion about evolution with the idea that just because evolution cannot explain absolutely everything does not necessarily mean that it is false. that we need to throw it out.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's true either.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Because it can't explain everything, right? There's certainly problems.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. But just keep that in mind as you're listening to our conversation.
Okay.
So
great.
Let's move on.
Okay, so the next area where we're at now is, why are we even talking about this? Mm-hmm. Why even bring it up? If it's a scientific thing we've been working on for the past 200 years, we haven't even mentioned religion yet. And this is a Science and Religion podcast. So why are we bringing this up? Where has this been a problem in the past, Seth?
Oh, gosh. Well, this problem has been has been very evident in the past, specifically between religion and evolution.
Okay.
These things have clashed from early on. If you want to start with the infamous or famous, whatever you want to say, the Scopes monkey trials.
Yes.
Where, what was the guy's name? I know his last name is Scopes. His first name.
Oh, actually, I'm not sure.
He was basically teaching evolution within a classroom.
Right. It was all about education.
Education.
Yeah. The teaching.
And he came under serious fire. I think it was in Arkansas.
Probably.
He came under serious fire for doing that. I think he actually got fired. Is that right? You'll have to fact check us on that.
This is something you get to learn your own.
That's right.
This is the interactive part.
But, so that was just trial number one. Since then, there has been numerous trials on what can and cannot be taught within a classroom according to what is or is not science.
Right.
There's this great book called, written by Giberson. I don't know his first name, but it's called Never Closing Argument. And he examines, like, 7 or 8 massive court trials on how is it that evolution is taught in the classroom? Can evolution be taught? And so whenever these conversations come up, you see these two groups, evolutionists and the church, religion, clashing very hard.
Okay, so we see that this has happened historically, but now we get to think, okay, so why? So why is this an issue? Mm-hmm. And if you think back 2 weeks ago when we talked about origin of the world, we ordered this in a particular order that we might be able to do this, that if you think about some of these worldviews of how explaining how the world came to be, evolution jives with some of them and does not with others.
That's right.
And so when evolution comes up out of nowhere and starts getting taught to your children and suddenly it's challenging your entire worldview and how you think everything is, of course that's alarming to people. Of course people push back against that, no matter what it is. And so we see, so specifically, the worldviews of having a young Earth, of having specifically intelligently designed, fundamental literalistic Bible interpretation runs into some issues as far as timing goes, as far as a lot of people, I think, get emotionally charged of saying, well, am I a monkey? You're calling me a monkey. Right. Like, they take offense to that, and I can empathize with that.
Absolutely.
It seems like a degrading thing to say. And so certainly there's a lot of emotions and a lot of theology worldview mixed in to get this mess that we're at. So with that being said, let's move on to our last bit and talk about, okay, so what is the conversation that's going on right now?
Mm-hmm.
What are both sides saying? And so we're going to take a little bit to explain kind of an argument for, and then we'll talk about some opposition to that, some questions being raised.
Yeah. So Colin, what do you have for us?
Okay, so a big idea that I found fascinating that I think a lot of people keep bringing up is this idea of naturalism and of functionalism. So naturalism is this idea that we are finding explanations in nature for natural things, right? They have natural causes. We brought this up before on this podcast before, that's a big thing that, oh, well, if we can explain all of these things through natural causes, well, that makes sense. Everything checks off. The evolution has been the cornerstone of the naturalistic argument for the past several hundred years. Another big thing I find compelling about evolution is functionalism, is this idea that individual parts of every biological organism has a reason and a purpose for that being there. This certain bird, its feathers are this color for a reason, because those other colors were weeded out. And there's something functional, there's something beautiful behind that. And I think that that's a really neat part of it. And lastly, we see lots of evidence scientifically for evolution in the past. Oh gosh, since Darwin came up with the idea and running with that, like we've mentioned before, it has turned into a law. We've had many scientific replications and publications on this, and I think a lot of the fundamental core of the argument against it is specifically attacking the science, because the science is so prevalent, because it's so weighty. We have all of this stuff pointing towards it. The main argument against it is, okay, well, are those studies done correctly? Are they done impartially? I think that is probably the biggest opposition to it. Before we jump in, I also have a few other arguments against. Some people will say it is directional, that is saying, oh, well, you're making humans into this super race, and that can be problematic, or you know, we see signs of maybe things degressing around us, and so it's like, oh, is de-evolution a thing, devolution, or you know how does that work? And so there's arguments against those things as well, that it being naturally selected, it's both unbiased and non-directional. But essentially those that's kind of what I've heard in my realm, the arguments for and against questioning the validity of these scientific studies versus agreeing with them is really where the crux of it is.
That's good. I kind of want to bring up at this time, just because it popped into my head, there's a really interesting scientist out there named Francis Collins.
Oh, yes.
Who, he was the head of the Human Genome Project. I think that's what it was called.
Yep.
Where they
yep.
mapped the human genome. Right. They literally mapped the human genome, which was like... So they mapped it, which is crazy. But he is a firm believer in evolution. But he's also a firm Christian.
Really?
Absolutely. And... He's written a lot of good resources on arguments for why evolution makes sense. So if you want to get into more details, like more of the biology, that biology class that we said we're not going to have, well, Francis Collins is your guy to go to for that.
Yeah, and so I'm glad you brought that up. So I don't think Seth or I believes that evolution is an either or. Either you're religious and you disagree with it, or you're non-religious and you agree with it.
Right.
And typically that's how it's portrayed, because that is very much a opposition, a argumentative way of looking at it. And I don't think that's necessarily true. And so I'm glad you brought Francis Collins, because like we said last week, for the origin of the world, there are several worldviews. I'm thinking specifically... the literary framework that we mentioned 2 weeks ago that evolution tucks very nicely into, as well as some of the young Earth adaptations.
Right.
I'm thinking specifically of the Earth was created to seem like it was really old, as Adam was born to be old, you know, a man. Mm-hmm. So the Earth was created already that old. So there definitely are a few ways you can justify, I would say, both. And that's something you get to explore for yourself.
Absolutely.
Is how these worldviews ties in with the science.
Okay, well, let's move on to, well, not really move on, but let's talk some more about arguments against.
Right.
Some of the things that I've kind of heard, that I've experienced. I probably am not as passionate about evolution as Colin is, but that's because, again, the environment that I was in is a little different than he is. So, and here, I mentioned earlier that there's going to be a surprise at the end of the podcast. Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, and let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. So actually, it was just last night, I recorded a brief interview with my dad, Curtis Brown. He's a family physician. who does not believe in evolution. And so he kind of gave some arguments against evolution. And so I think we're going to, Colin and I are going to bring those up and talk about those real quick, bounce those ideas around. And then there's maybe one more that I'd like to add. And then we'll probably wrap it up. So that being said, one of the first arguments that my dad presented was this idea that in order for evolution to occur, this is actually a really funny example, or I think it's a funny analogy that does a good job of explaining what my dad was getting at. So it's this idea that evolution is based off of the idea that given enough time, given enough mutations, random mutations, these different creatures were produced. And so that's, a lot of people make the comparison between that and the idea of that. So the idea that evolution produced that is the same as saying if you had a bunch of monkeys sitting at a typewriter randomly typing out, just punching random letters, eventually you would get a string of letters that produces Shakespeare's Hamlet. Now, if you sit there and you start thinking about, well, how long would that take? What are the chances of that happening? It's easy to, I think, see that, one, the chances are really slim, but given enough time, it could happen. And the argument my dad was making is that the chances of evolution actually happening are so small that given, even though there's a lot of years, 13.7 billion years, given those, that large amount of years, evolution still could not have produced the complexity of life that we see today. So that was argument number one. Do you have any thoughts?
We'll talk about that. So essentially, yeah, I think that's an interesting point brought up. I'm obviously not speaking for all of the scientific community, but it's off of this idea that once we're talking about in the scale of billions with a B of years and these biological processes that have been occurring on Earth, it's really easy to act outside of the realm of, well, I can manage this and play around this with my intellect, right? It's like whenever we're talking about the national budget and the trillions of dollars, that number means nothing to me, because it's so big, I can't even fathom what that is. And so that's the scale we're talking about here. And so it's really, I can definitely understand why people would say, well, I don't understand how this could happen, therefore it probably didn't happen. Like, I totally get that. I get that. And that's if that is where you're at, then power to you. But I think my rebuttal would be, well, let's look to the science. Yeah. Like, it's easy to say, well, I don't know, but
So that's argument number one. Argument number two was more of a, and I kind of mentioned this briefly to Colin, it was more of an argument against the idea of naturalism.
Okay.
Metaphysical naturalism.
Yes.
Think back to episode two, definitions. It's more of an attack on metaphysical naturalism than it was evolution itself.
Okay.
And so basically, my dad argued that evolution does not explain why we have moral laws in our heart, or not in our heart, but just the idea we have these moral ideas of justice, of goodness, of beauty. How is it that when we look at a sunrise, we're just taken away by beauty? What was the need for that? Because you said that evolution, everything that evolution does is has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what really is the purpose of being taken aback by the beauty of a sunrise? How did that advance man's progress? However, that's more of an attack on metaphysical naturalism, the idea that there is only natural causes.
Right.
Both Colin and I...
And I think people would argue there are natural causes for that as well.
That's true.
That it was predictive, and that just may be a hole in our theory of evolution that will one day be filled by natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true. That evolutionists do kind of have a way of explaining that, but the way that they explain it is not very satisfying.
It
leaves a lot to be. So basically, they say that these deep So a man who runs back into a burning building to save someone. Well, that's just the result of this. When man lived more in a community that really relied on each other, evolution kind of produced this sense of caring for one another. Well, man is no longer in that same situation. He doesn't necessarily need to run back into a burning building to save someone. So why does he do it? Well, it's just a misfiring of a previously built-in evolutional aspect. Right. And so for me, again, you said this is not a satisfying explanation for me. For me, looking at one of the most noble and brave things that someone could do, risk his life for another man and saying, that's just a misfire.
It's uneasy.
That's very uneasy. Okay, sure. That's very uneasy for me. No, I'm glad you brought that up. I would probably say a lot of other people.
Sure. I imagine so.
So that's number two. We'll move on.
So you're saying it seems to kind of cheapen the idea of people being heroes if it's like,
I would say that it
does means cheapen. Nothing. Okay.
Again, it can explain that act, but anyways.
Okay.
I don't think it does a great job. Interesting. Moving on. Argument number three was more of example arguments, in that we talked about the complexity of the eye. We talked about the complexity of a metamorphosis of a bug becoming a butterfly. We talked a little bit about the complexity of the inner ear and how there's so many moving parts that kind of needed to be in place that evolution couldn't have gradually produced these things one on top of the other. So how is it that we are able to explain away things like the eye and the inner ear, or, as I mentioned,
that you're saying would seem to have a lot of things that evolved that, together,
right? That kind of came together all at once,
whereas to have a function. Sure. I don't know what the answer is to that either. I'm sure there are many good theories there, but once again, may be unsatisfying.
Well, this goes back to the idea that I mentioned earlier about paradigms.
Yes. Bring that
up. Just because evolution doesn't have an answer yet doesn't mean that it will never have an answer.
Right.
So it's good to talk about these things and kind of hold these up and say, evolution, like, how do you explain this? Because one, that's going to make evolutionists work harder to explain that. And then maybe eventually there may come a point where evolution can explain that. And then we have to propose a new theory. But that's who knows when that's going to be. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. That could be. Anyways. But I think that's important to remember that, again, just because we have this example here and this example over here doesn't disprove the numerous other evidences for why this makes sense.
Yeah, and once again, that's still at its core the I don't see how this could happen, therefore it probably didn't argument. So, that is a place I'm sure many people are at.
Mm-hmm.
And because to understand this stuff, to really understand the complexity, humans are really complex. Biology is really hard. That's why we pay biologists a lot of money to do it so other people don't have to, right? Yeah. So to really grasp all of these things that we're now talking about would take a lot of work to even figure out what you're talking about. So it's tough. It's hard.
So there's one more example. I don't think we'll get to it because we're kind of running out of time here just a bit. Well, why not? We'll go for it. So there's one more of those examples where it's like you kind of hold it up and evolution has a difficult time explaining away this process.
Okay.
And this may get into a little biology lesson.
Warning.
Probably not though. So there's this term, there's this epic in, not epic, but this time period in Earth's history called that people have called the Cambrian explosion. And essentially this, what that means is that in life's development from the beginning to where we are now as humans, it was a very slow and gradual process, which is what we'd expect if evolution is true, as evidence points to. We expect slow, gradual changes resulting in a variety of creatures.
Yes, yes.
Well, there's this time period that is happened. I looked it up just now, 541 million years ago, a while ago, and the period was 20 to 25 million years long. Now, the problem with the Cambrian explosion is that during this time, there was such an explosion of variety of life to the extent in which evolution has a hard time explaining how did we get this much life in such a short period of time. Because honestly, 20 to 25 million years is a short period of time when you look at 13.7 billion years.
Right.
So that's one of the things that evolutionists have a hard time explaining. Stephen C. Meyer wrote a book that kind of looks at this idea of the Cambrian explosion. It's called Darwin's Doubt. I haven't read it, but people say it's good.
Okay.
So again, this is another one of those problems that evolution has yet to explain.
Sure.
Or their explanations as they are now don't quite fit
all. Or like you said, with Newton's law of gravity, it doesn't fit in that paradigm.
Right.
Right. I think I'm gonna try to
Are you gonna try to recreate?
I think I'm gonna try to recreate. Okay, so paradigms. So like Seth was talking about earlier, science is not gathering of facts. It's not putting files into a file folder that's getting longer and longer and longer. Right. It's you have a puzzle with a lot of puzzle pieces. I'm gonna change the analogy. Why not? And you're fitting all these puzzle pieces in, and suddenly you get a fact that doesn't fit. Either your puzzle isn't big enough, or there's not a corresponding shape. And so there's one of two things you can do. One, you can throw the fact out, which isn't very ethical. Or two, you can take the base off of the puzzle that you're working on and you know, make a bigger area that you can now fit this puzzle in. Mm-hmm. And so a paradigm shift is really changing, you know, the container that you're trying to fit all of these puzzle pieces into,
right,
to make it bigger or shaped in the correct way.
Okay.
And so with that in mind, evolution is the current paradigm that we're at. Whether you agree with it or not, that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking big picture, we're going to take a step back here. The takeaway for today is considering where we're at in science, which is the paradigm that allele change via natural selection happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what you do with that...
Allele being...
Oh, thank you.
Gene change.
Gene change via natural selection. So, what can you do with that? You can consider whether you're for evolution or opposed to it. We have all of these facts. These puzzle pieces are there. And I'm sure you can argue against the science. A lot of the opposition to evolution argues against some of these scientific studies.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually those are going to work themselves out and be more credible as time goes on. Right. That's just how science works. So if you don't agree with the paradigm that we're at, what is there? What mm-hmm. other container could we have? A lot of people say intelligent design
is a
container that explains natural occurrences around us. We're not going to go a ton into that today, but mm-hmm. That is probably the big competitor to evolution, one that fits with some of these worldviews we talked about 2 weeks ago very nicely.
And even then, there's I was just reading this article. There's ways to use intelligent design without a supernatural being.
Okay.
Which is really, it's weird. I don't necessarily get it, but it's this idea that there's a higher life form.
I read about this as well.
Did you really? There's basically aliens, I think is what they're trying to say.
Or that the universe has a consciousness.
Right.
Is what they're saying.
Right. And that intelligent design has manifested itself in what we see today.
Yeah.
So again, it's not that evolution is the only explanation, but as it stands now, it's the one that's accepted and it's the best one.
Right.
When another one comes along that does a better job of explaining some of the anomalies and still leaves enough questions for science to happen, then we're going to see a radical change in the way we do science.
But that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Is there anything else that we missed?
I don't think so. I think we covered most of it. Once again, we love to hear feedback.
Oh yes,
please.
We know you've got it.
If you guys after this have episode. Persevered this far into the series, this far into this episode, let us know. Tell
Seriously,
us. Just be
go
like,
on.
Hey, I'm at minute 54 of this episode, and I want to let you guys know. So we'd love to hear that.
Absolutely. So just to kind of finish off this episode, I mentioned that I did an interview with my dad. You're going to hear that right after this. We'll play a little interlude music, maybe some nice smooth jazz to relax those heightened emotions.
Yes, please.
And that interview is about 20 minutes or so long. It's just me and my dad, so it was weird. I was calling him Curtis. Well, I was trying to call him Curtis because it was like...
Formal?
Not everyone knows it.
How funny.
He's my dad.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I was trying to call him like...
Interesting.
I'd say dad, I mean Curtis. So hey, thanks for coming along, guys. Again, just to reemphasize it, give us some feedback. We'd love it. We will see you next time.
Next time.
All right. Hey guys, welcome to the Science and Religion Podcast. My name is Seth Brown. I am by myself tonight. My co-host, Colin Turpin, is not here, but I do have a guest with me. We'll introduce him here in a bit. So this is another in our series of episodes on evolution. In our first episode, Colin and I really talked about evolution in detail. What is it all about? What are maybe some arguments on either side? And so we hope that you guys have been pretty well informed on evolution and that you have been able to kind of grapple with these issues yourself. In this episode, what I would like to do is bring on, as I mentioned, a guest and kind of hear a different perspective other than Colin and I's, just to, get you guys thinking about both sides of the argument. So the guest I have on with me today is my very own father, Curtis Brown. So... It's going to be weird calling you. I guess I'll just call you Dad. Okay. So, Dad, Curtis, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do,
sure.
The usual.
Well, my main job has been being Seth's dad for a while.
Yeah, but it's a big task right there.
Big task. But to make money, I'm a physician. I do family practice and have been in family practice for over 30 years now. And... I know this podcast is about evolution and I believe in creation and not evolution. So yeah. That's the side that I take on it. But I do think it'll be interesting to see what conclusions we come to maybe after talking, because there may be room for both sides.
Oh, so. Absolutely. I hope so. So as I mentioned, Colin and I, when we talked, we may have slanted a little more towards evolution, towards some of the scientific evidence towards evolution. Regardless, I think we're in for a good pod. So I just want to ask some questions, Dad, maybe to Curtis, to get your perspective. So why is it that when people talk about evolution that there's usually some really deep emotions involved? Why is it that people get really fired up and defensive when we talk about evolution? What do you think?
Well, I don't. It's probably different for different people, but I really think evolutionists, honestly, it's almost like a faith or religion to them. And so when you are attacking someone's faith or core beliefs, it gets real personal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just gets to it gets too personal for some people. They can't separate out the emotion and the logic and all the feelings that go with your faith, mm-hmm. and what you believe. It becomes a core of who you are. So,
right.
So you're really attacking a core of that person.
Yeah.
On either side.
Right, right. I was about to say on either side, you eat that with people who believe in creation as well.
Exactly.
It's a very fundamental assault on their core belief. So you, in light of that, is it necessary to talk about these things? Is it important to talk about these kind of issues?
No, I guess it depends on what your goals are.
Okay.
You know, if I think, you know, we're instructed in the Bible to be able to give a good answer for what we believe.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I think it's important. But if you're talking about you know, if you're trying to convince someone about the existence of God and Christ, I don't think you have to talk about evolution or creation. I mean, that's a big part of the story, obviously, but that it's not that you come to faith in creation that
right.
makes you a Christ follower. So,
okay, so that I think that kind of leads into my next question, because you kind of hinted at it already. Is it? Do you think it's possible to be a Christian and believe in evolution?
Yes. Now. Not every.
There's almost an asterisk with that.
A lot of my Christian friends would just curl their, they'd get fuzzed up over thinking about it. But what makes a Christian is faith in Jesus Christ.
Right.
It's not faith in the Bible. I mean, that sounds almost sacrilegious, but it's believing that Jesus died for your sins.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes you a Christian. The rest of this becomes perhaps more important as you grow in your faith and trying to determine what it is you do and don't believe about.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There's a verse in the book of John that I always, it's one of my favorite things that Jesus ever said. He says, he's talking to the Pharisees, and I apologize for those who may be not familiar with the Bible and the stories, but basically the Pharisees were kind of Jesus's opponents, the people who attacked him with different arguments. So he responds, and he's talking to the Pharisees, and he basically says, you search the scriptures diligently because you think that in them you have eternal life. These are the same scriptures that testify about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life. So I think it's interesting. I like how you said it's not faith in the Bible, it's faith in Jesus, the person,
yeah.
Which is fundamentally different from a lot of other religions. But that's, again, beside the point.
That's another podcast.
another podcast for another day. Okay, one last question, and then we'll get into some arguments that you see that evolutionists have a really hard time getting around. The last question, can someone be scientific and reasonable and not accept evolution?
Certainly. But you know, I was thinking as you were saying that, you could just substitute global warming in there too, right?
Okay.
There are bright minds on either side of the issue of global warming. And so a lot of it depends on what you want to believe.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
And what you're looking for. But yeah, I think bright minds can come to the different conclusions over the same subject.
Yeah, I think the part of the reason why I asked that question is I think it's easy for people on either side to readily dismiss the other's arguments because it's unscientific or they're just close-minded, you know, which in some cases may be true.
Sure.
In that sometimes people's reasons for why they don't believe in evolution or why they do believe in evolution just they're not really good and well thought out, which
they're more emotions than
right, exactly.
Than logical thinking.
Okay, so let's get to. I'd love to hear some of the things that you see in science and nature that you kind of point to and say, man, evolution has a really hard time explaining it. So I think I said before we started like three arguments.
Sure.
Hey, you don't have to do three. Just
well, I want to. State at first, though, whether you believe in evolution or in creation, at the very beginning, it's a step of faith. Because whether you believe in a creator or that it just was a big bang or maybe the creator used the big bang or whatever, either side of the argument begins with faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get past that.
You know? Absolutely.
If you're of the mindset, well, I disagree with that, then it's going to be really hard to have a conversation about it. So when I think about it, one of the biggest or the most common arguments people who really believe in evolution give is, well, with enough time, anything is possible, you know, and that I just fundamentally disagree with that. I've never seen Seth's room spontaneously clean itself. You know,
I wish that happened.
Yeah, but it just doesn't happen. You know, the law of entropy, and you know, things do not naturally come together, either by accident or it requires input for it to come together. Now, an evolutionist would say, well, there was energy input from the outside world, but I'm just, that whole time concept is, I think, fundamentally flawed. But I would have to give that argument up. I mean, with billions and billions of years, I mean, endless possibilities, but the reality is it probably just doesn't happen. You know, and then as a Christ follower, every sunrise I can see God's glory just screaming out at to me. So I think just from a spiritual perspective, just looking out at nature, God speaks. But from a more scientific thing, one of the things that I, when I'm talking to people who believe in evolution, is talk about how the whole idea of a cocoon.
Okay.
You know, so you got some little bug crawls into a cocoon, and then all this magic happens in the cocoon.
Okay.
And then it becomes a butterfly or a moth or something. And there's no logical progression. So evolution, every change leads to, there's some reason there's a change. How can you explain the cocoon? It just, there's not a natural reason for it to do that. And the complexity of all the stuff that happens. I mean, you got a bug growing wings and all the internal changes that go on. There's just, so that one always gives pause, I think.
Okay. So just to review, I think I kind of caught three. The first one being the idea of, so evolutionists place a lot of faith in, if you give enough time to any random process,
a monkey can type Shakespeare.
Absolutely. That's for sure one of the examples that they throw out there. Given billions and billions of years, and if you had thousands and thousands of monkeys just sitting away hammering at a typewriter, eventually, theoretically, Shakespeare would be produced. And so in the same way, evolutionists kind of argue that, well, hey, if we have enough time and enough random gene mutations or whatever you want to, whatever drives that process along, eventually order would arise out of it, or something that has the appearance of order. So that's kind of your big argument, number one, just to clarify. Second one I thought was really interesting. You said you look at nature and you're taken away at the glory that you see in nature that points to another, something outside of nature.
A higher
right.
existence.
So I think what I would like to ask there, so there's this idea I think that you're getting at, that you're driving at, is that evolution by itself, how could evolution produce that sensation within us? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, you can. What drives a man to rush into a burning building and save someone? If we were purely on evolution, we wouldn't do that. And so where does that sense come from? Where does that moral responsibility, how do you explain moral responsibility from an evolutionary standpoint? They're not always, you can't, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't make sense for someone to risk their life to save another life if it's, you know, the strongest that survive.
Right.
And so where does that come from? Where does the emotion of love come from? How do you know love without knowing what love is? And,
mm-hmm.
and so you could get into a whole nother arguments, but those are more kind of spiritual arguments.
Right, more philosophical rather than scientific.
Scientific.
So one last thing on that last one, and then we'll kind of jump back to the scientific arguments. So to kind of push back a little bit, evolutionists do claim that you can... There is a way you can explain these kind of feelings. So they say that these feelings of moral responsibility, of love, whatever, arose when man was evolving. He was in a community, and the best way to survive was to care for one another. Now, the problem with that I see is that you're calling one of the, so for example, it, you look at a man running back into a burning building to save someone. You're looking at one of the most noble and profound things that humanity can do, and you're calling, oh, that's a misfire. Like, that's a misfiring of evolution. That's a really, you can explain it away, but that does not sit well with a lot of people.
Yeah.
It does not sit well with a lot of people. So, okay, let's jump back to the scientific. You mentioned the cocoon, and you talked about how the complexity of the cocoon just kind of...
Yeah, you know, just in thinking through that, so, you know, we've mapped the human genome now,
mm-hmm.
and I honestly, when I was studying medicine, didn't think that would ever be possible because of the complexity of it. So most changes occur, you know, on a DNA level. And so when a cocoon, a bug gets into a cocoon, there's all sorts of DNA changes going on. That their DNA is actually changed.
Hmm.
In my experience, when I see humans that have DNA being changed, it's more often than not turns into hazard and not health.
So, for example,
Down syndrome.
Okay.
Is a genetic abnormality, and you know it's so. So for humans to evolve, why aren't we still evolving? Or maybe it's just so slow we can't see it. That's the argument.
Mm-hmm.
But to evolve, it means that our DNA fundamentally has to be changed or expressed differently. And whenever that happens in medicine, it's a negative impact. It's not a positive impact. Mm-hmm. So just from a DNA standpoint, it's hard to explain evolution.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because so the guy who mapped the human genome, Francis Collins, have you heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
He's a big evolutionist. He's a Christian, but he's also a big proponent of evolution. So
sure.
Again, I think that goes back to, so you're looking at this data and you're seeing something else, and he's looking at it and he's seeing something. So,
but I would think he would argue about a divine creator.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I think and he would so. Too. I could accept the argument that maybe God used evolution, but there was divine involvement in it.
Okay.
And so it doesn't spontaneously change. There's guidance and a system. But even at that, I really don't believe we evolved from a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why a person of faith would say, well, God used evolution to explain how we got here.
Mm-hmm. Are there any more examples of kind of this idea of nature producing something too complex that evolution just has, like there's too many moving parts for evolution to gradually get there on its own?
Yeah, when you just start looking at the human body, you can just almost start anywhere. And the eye is an obvious source. You know, how did the eye develop? You know, there's so much complexity to it, to the cones and the rods and the brain that it's connected to. It is hard to imagine without the excuse of billions and billions and billions of years,
right.
How that a photocell on a skin could be modified into an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at eyes. How many different eyes are there in the world? You know, bugs have different eyes.
Yeah.
Different primates have different eyes, and to think that they all evolved, you know, it
mm-hmm.
just doesn't, in my mind, doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with the inner ear, you know, the ear, the part that controls our balance is very, you know, if we didn't have that, we wouldn't be able to stand upright. Well, which came first? Did we stand upright or did we develop that? Why would we develop that if we didn't stand or balance?
Okay.
So yeah, just almost any organ in the body.
Well, I think that's all we have time for. Is there any kind of parting thoughts that maybe you'd like? You're on a mic. You got an audience, a captive audience. So, any parting thoughts?
Sure. I think if you're a skeptic, I would just challenge you to follow the truth. And in the Bible, Jesus says, "Seek the truth, and you'll find it." And I believe that all truth leads to Jesus eventually. If you truly seek the proof. And what some people would call evolution, I might call God's fingerprints.
Okay.
You know, so I would not let the idea of evolution or the idea of creation keep someone from coming to an understanding or a faith in Christ. That don't let that stop you from exploring this person we call Jesus.
Cool. Well, Curtis, Dad, thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed it. Had a little shorter podcast, but I think what we're going to end up doing is coupling this podcast with another guest interview, kind of coming from a different angle, someone who is a big proponent of evolution. So hopefully these two episodes, these two interviews side by side, will give you some really good conversation starters. It'll make you really think and consider what do you believe personally? What do I believe personally about evolution? So thanks for tagging along, and we'll see you next time.